Step one of phase four includes indoor and outdoor stadiums, as well as arenas and ballparks like Gillette Stadium, Fenway Park, and TD Garden.
Woohoo!
We are all Patriots.
Suck on it.
Dale Arnold.
I don't think that Deshaun Watson should try and sit out. You know, you look at James Harden, he showed up in a fat man suit and he got his wishes.
Rich Key.
You can play it all you want if you think Nick Ritchie is this great player all of a sudden.
Wheels it to Jakob Sabolton. Ritchie, he scores!
Dalen Keefe with Fitzy.
Is it because of my perfectly coiffed, fresh out of the shower hair?
Is it because of my
Magnum Dom?
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
You know, I was listening with interest to the Greg Hill Show, as I do every morning, and we didn't do a crossover today, because I would have been able to admit to Greg and Danielle and Wiggy and the guys behind the glass that I actually did work on a garbage truck once.
How about that?
It was.
Oh, you should talk about Dale and Noomi differently.
That was not the garbage truck. There was another show that
they
was the garbage
too,
truck.
Perhaps.
Yeah, that wasn't it. No, I was a kid. I was like 12, 13 years old. It was a summer job. And it wasn't, you know, the big fancy garbage trucks like you have now. This was an open box truck. And you'd have to chuck the stuff.
Just fire everything in there, huh?
Well, the worst part was I was the kid. So my job was to stand up in the box truck.
Oh.
And move everything to the front of the truck to make more room for the stuff that was coming in the back.
Not good.
And this was, you know, pre-internet days. I was a kid.
Yeah. Sure. So no iPad.
What I learned was that an inordinate number of people had porn,
yes,
which they were trying to fire out in their garbage.
Why are they throwing it out?
I'm not sure how good it was at that point.
Wait a second. People
Fair.
Would actually throw away perfectly good pornography?
I don't understand that. Especially without the internet, you think that would be worth gold back then.
I was amazed at how much porn ended up in people's garbage.
That is fascinating.
One of the happiest days of my life was when I was in college,
yeah,
and a buddy of mine was working at a Hollywood video store, I think in like Avon or Canton, and they got rid of the adult section, so he put it all in a giant box and mailed it to me.
Wow. Whoa.
I mean,
like, Paul Rudd in 4-Year-Old Virgin giving the box to Steve Carell.
Swear to God, I opened
everybody
that thing up.
Everybody loves Raymond.
It was a bright
a
light
show.
That came out. This angelic music started playing out. I was like, did I die? Is this heaven?
Now, that was the only positive part of that job.
I mean, imagine there
it was.
Oh, the smell of garbage carpaccio every day didn't.
And by the way, it's a summer job, right? So it's like it's not like February where everything's frozen anyway. It was and maggots and
maggots.
I got you one better, Dale. Down in Marshfield over the
job?
Summers, yeah,
what
in high school. So I used to
segment?
Yeah, story time. So I used to do the trash cans at the piers in Marshfield where all the fish guts go.
Nope.
And they're these big industrial bags. And one day, so you got to spin it around a few times to get it up in the truck. One day, big gust of wind comes right as I let the bag go. Fish guts blown all over my body. This was at like 10 in the morning, so I had to go like 6 more hours like that.
Did you jump in the ocean immediately, John? You had to.
Oh, God, I would.
No, I got in the truck and I finished my job.
Yeah,
punched out.
Do your job, guy.
After I get out of the ocean, I finish my job.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you got to go wash off, John. You can't be walking around the rest of the day with that.
Take a tomato.
I wasn't exactly trying to impress anyone in that job, Dale. Unlike now, which is why I dress the way I do, I am trying to impress
people. Self-respect, maybe, wouldn't
tell
you.
How about maybe just not catching every possible disease that ends with Ella?
Yeah.
Just jump in the ocean, John.
It's all of the fish. Yeah.
Just the thought. So, Fitzy, other than this job, what was your worst ever? Other than this gig?
The worst gig I ever had was I was super desperate for work one summer between college years, and I was home, and I was fresh off of a grade 3 ankle sprain, so I was hobbling around Boston. And the only gig I was able to pick up, because I missed the first month of hiring season for college kids back home, I had a job where I had to walk around with a tiny portable DVD player. And I had to stop people on the street and ask them if they would watch movie trailers and then get their opinion on the movie trailers.
You know what? Garbage truck was better.
Yeah. My God. It was the most
uncomfortable. Hey, you guys like movies? Like, sure.
Hey, are you a fan of cinema? I was wondering.
You're a stranger. I'm not going to talk to you or look at your phone. Hey, I got a video to show you.
Yeah.
Hey, kid, come here. I got a video.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at your video, mister.
Hey, girls, you enjoy going to the movies?
Oh, yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was torture.
And then wouldn't you have like a questionnaire that they had to fill out after the fact?
Yes, and the funny thing was it wasn't like, Did you like that? Did it elicit a positive response?
That,
would you
right?
go see it? It was like a 15-question questionnaire. Like, I went back to the people. I was like, nobody wants to do 15 questions in 92-degree heat just
at
off Boston Common. At
the 30-second mark, did you feel, A, melancholy, B...
How would you, on a
in
scale
rapture.
Of 1 to 10, how, what would you say the Q rating of this hero is in this movie? Oh, God. It was absolutely
That is a
miserable.
Weird, that is an odd job.
That is a strange way to make a living. So we got to ask, Rich, did you have the worst job ever? I was on a garbage truck. Fitzy was worse than mine.
I've mentioned on the show before, I worked in a warehouse for 2 summers packing cigarettes.
Oh, the cigarette warehouse.
One. But honestly, it really wasn't bad because it was inside during the summer, so I didn't sweat like crazy or anything. And it actually paid okay, or at least I thought it did at the time. Mm-hmm. But that was probably the one, and I'm not a morning person, and I had to get up super early to go in there, so that was the worst part of that job. But that wasn't too bad. But
so you weren't tempted to take some of the product home and give it a whirl?
Let's see. Did it pay in cartons, bro?
I could have made a fortune if I stole a few boxes of those things.
Oh, yeah.
Those things were worth a lot. But, yeah, I'm just, you know, not a big smoker. Just being surrounded by cigarettes all day was not my favorite thing. But, yeah.
You know, when you're a kid, you got to make some money. You got to
do
what you got to do.
Uh-huh. And, absolutely.
Probably the best job I ever had as a kid was waiting around in the water hazards at a golf course, collecting errant golf balls and selling them back to the pro shop.
Oh, the golf ball, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Oh,
that's
it was
a great
the
gig.
Best waiting around in the pond all day long and, you know, selling the golf balls back to the pro shop. Now, you had to be careful because there was incoming sometimes. You know, you got to
had to
keep your head up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Or snakes. Bad. You know, snakes. The occasional random.
You know, I was a little kid. I was a young kid. I didn't care.
Whatever. What's a little water moccasin bite amongst friends, huh?
A little venom in the ankle.
No big deal. Yep. So Rich is back. The band is back together again, and we've got a whole bunch of stuff that we're going to get to throughout the course of the day today. It is our Friday Forum segment where we kind of look at what we think was the biggest stories of the past week, and I'll kick this thing off because, you know, when you look at what was happening behind the scenes perhaps and now in front of the scenes, Governor Charlie Baker makes my Friday Forum with this announcement yesterday.
Step one of phase four includes indoor and outdoor stadiums as well as arenas and ballparks like Gillette Stadium, Fenway Park, and TD Garden, which will be permitted to reopen with a 12% capacity limit.
Now, my first thought was, they got to come up with a better system. Step one, phase four. I mean, it's
very
so
confusing.
Complicated.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to keep up with everything, but...
My second thought was 12%.
12.
Not 10. No, like the Bruins are playing at Madison Square Garden tonight for the first mm-hmm. time in almost a year in front of fans. And in New York, it's 10%. Mm-hmm. So we had to do them 2% better.
We're
they
better
got
than
10%
New York.
York.
You know
we got to do better than them.
That's right. 12%. We'll take it.
How arbitrary. Doesn't it just seem
it
like
is.
What science declared just a tick under 1/8 capacity?
Probably the same one that said 15 minutes of close contact, not 10, not 20, 15. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I don't know. Just go with it.
I had it on very good authority yesterday. Before Charlie Baker made his announcement, we told everybody what he was going to say, that it was going to be 12%. And I had it on very good authority from, you know, the same source, that one of the things that pushed this thing across the finish line was that the Red Sox were more than dropping hints that if they couldn't have any fans at Fenway to start the season, they were just going to stay in Florida for the start of the regular season. They were just going to stay there.
Yeah. You know what, Dale? Honestly, with the fact that they have 25% capacity at a lot of the different spring training stadiums and they're doing it pod style, I tried the other day when we were on the radio during a break to get tickets to Sunday's Red Sox spring training opener, veritably, at Hammond Stadium or Hammond Field where the Twins play.
Yep.
Sold out in seconds. Now, it's only
really?
Like 2,500 people, but that's over 50% of what they're going to be allowed to have at Fenway. And at JetBlue, they can have, I think, probably like about 3,000 because it seats 8,500. Why wouldn't they just stay there until they're told they can have fans back home? They're comfortable here. The weather is you don't have to pitch in mid-April with frozen fingertips when it's 38 degrees and it may sleet. So I don't blame them in the least. Yeah. There's a definite appetite for getting out and enjoying America's pastime down here. Don't blame them a bit.
So these are the numbers, you know, ballpark numbers. For a Bruins game, it's 2,108 fans. For a Celtics game, it's 2,352. For the Red Sox, it's 4,527. for the Patriots / Revs. It's 7,905. The Revs would be thrilled to have that many people in a game. Let's be honest. Well, come just trying to
tell the truth
here. But would you maybe consider, do you think there could be an uptick in interest in going to Revs games because people are just so desperate?
Just to get out.
Could
just get out. Yeah.
It's something to do.
And they start here soon.
In the first place.
Yeah, they start here soon. So, you know, this
good team.
This goes into effect March 22nd. The first Bruins game with fans will be March 23rd. Now, they've still got a lot of details to work out. This is going to be a complicated thing. Who's going to get tickets? How do you get them? How do you get into the building? How do you get to your seats? Are they going to have family pods? How do you pay for concessions? So there's a lot of details to be worked out. But for me, I'm all good. This is a positive thing. It is a small step towards the road to normalcy, but at least it's a step.
Yeah, and we've seen it with, you know, opponents, whether it be Patriots opponents and some of their road games. We've seen some fans there, or the Celtics or whatever it might be. So you've seen sort of what it looks like. And I've been a little bit surprised that it's a little bit louder than I anticipated. I thought it'd be pretty dead. And I thought even if there's a big, like, you know, change in momentum on the floor, it'd be like, well, you only have 10%, 12%, 15%, depending on the city, that it wouldn't really sound much. But when you've sort of gotten used to the tarped off stuff and only like the piped in music, it has helped. Like, you're telling me, like, the, you know, Kansas City wasn't kind of loud when the Patriots played, or when they went to Kansas City. Like, I don't know. I think it's something. And so that's all good. You know, you got to start somewhere. And so next month, get some fans in there. Great news.
I know when I was on the show yesterday with you and Andy, Dale, that
until you decided you weren't going to be on the show with me and Andy.
I'm sorry that notified on a Wednesday night. I was only able to pitch in for 3 of the 4 hours. But I next time I'll make. You know what? Next time I'll just tell the kids, actually, like, you know what, kid, you're going to have to do virtual school by yourself. Dad's got to argue with Andy Hart on the radio.
It was 2.5 of the 3 of the 4
I
hours.
Stayed till 12:52. I stayed 2 hours 52. See, and this brings up my point, Dale. We were talking about people in Massachusetts not being able to be happy with what they're given.
Only on the show for 2.5 hours.
I've done the show a lot more than the guy whose name is in the damn masthead this week, Dale.
I'm not going to say a word. You do a whole segment, Fitzy, yesterday. That's a win.
Yeah. So the point being that in Massachusetts, We were saying yesterday, like, let's hope people aren't complaining about long virtual lines about the vaccination and saying that that has any correlation to only 12% coming back. You know, just be grateful. And I am. But I know you just said we got to start somewhere, Rich, but it does draw me back to the attendance we saw in other towns and at other stadiums. And I just can't help but wonder. So in Kansas City, they've allowed, I think it's like 22 or 23% capacity from kickoff. So about 16,500 people at Arrowhead Stadium, all really fit people, really good people too.
Considering I thought so.
They booed the prayer circle at the start of the kickoff
they
game.
But I digress. The unity.
Yep, the unity circle.
Didn't like that.
Have we heard about mass outbreaks coming out of Arrowhead Stadium? Has there been like tailgate super spreader events? You know, 12 seems so conservative, and we all believe there'll be much more at Gillette Stadium this fall. But to have 4,500 people at a 38,000-seat Fenway Park, what are we doing?
Fitzy, all you have to do is look at the country. I mean, New York is 10%. Boston and Massachusetts is 12%. They're much more conservative on the coasts because the outbreak was worse on the coasts. Middle of the country, it wasn't as bad.
Population density,
they don't have to be as conservative. Mm-hmm. All of those things. I mean,
right. Legacy, generational housing.
It all makes sense.
I get it. I totally understand.
I will also tell you that the Patriots are planning and are not just hopeful, they are almost adamant that when they get to play in the fall, it's going to be full capacity.
Correct. And I told you guys a couple months ago, I was in the stadium, and part of my responsibilities for the team were this fall were keeping in touch and doing like fan and guest relations for the season ticket members, the club peoples and whatnot, and just sort of keeping them informed. And that's why I did a streaming pregame show for them. And one day we were filming a teaser video about the guests that we had coming up on that Sunday show. And we had to stop filming several times because they had started ramping up, like putting all of the beverage carts and the sausage carts and the 200s and the 300 section. Then they got the final word from Baker and the rest of the state that they couldn't have any fans all season. So there was this one guy who was basically plastic wrapping all of like the craft beer cart and the sausage guy cart and putting him on forklifts and sadly tucking him into storage. It was so sad. It was so depressing to watch them, like, Commerce, vitality, America, sports, and like, nope, jobs. Just, yeah, jobs, exactly. Nope, jobs. Put it away. Sorry, guys.
Put it away.
Back to the big frown.
Well, that the Tom Brady's return to the Patriots, if it's not full capacity, they just need to keep delaying it until it is. They just need to push that thing off until it's full house.
I can tell you the Patriots are convinced it will be at full capacity.
Mm-hmm. I hope they're right.
And you got a long time between now and then.
You do.
You know, obviously the number of vaccinations will be greatly increased.
Yeah.
You're about to get your third vaccine put online, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, more availability. You know, you're not talking until September here. So I think they have good reason to be optimistic that they'll have a full house.
Yeah.
Which could not be good for the Patriots.
I was going to say, all the teams,
like they did last year.
All the teams in Boston all of a sudden are wondering, do we want full crowds? Do we want everybody there? How's that going to look? You know, the Red Sox getting 4,000 fans in there. You know, if they play like they did last year, by the end of the season, that's probably what it would have been. I mean, I know it's an event still to go to Fenway, but it wouldn't have been full. They were so bad last year, and I don't think they'll be as bad as they were last year, but still, that was not a product that you needed to go see. There was not a lot of entertainment value there.
All right, Rich, what was your Friday forum takeaway?
Kind of piggybacking off of that whole idea of fans being back and seeing these teams and you're getting the real fan reaction, I'm curious what the Celtics will feel like once they get fans back in there, because this week has been an absolute collapse for this team. Think about the different games that they have played. So after Sunday, we came on the air Monday and talked about a 24-point third-quarter lead that disappeared and they lost it. 24 points midway through the third quarter, and they lost to a Pelicans team, which is, they have two really fun young players, but they're not a playoff team, and you lose to them. So you follow that up, right? That's the worst loss of the season. You follow that up with Dallas. You play like absolute garbage for most of the game. You come back because it looked like the Mavericks kind of just assumed that they'd won. They had not. Close game. Luka Doncic hits two monster shots. You lose that game to Dallas. Another team, not that good. One superstar, not that good of a team. And then, so now this is, you got blown out, or I'm sorry, you lose this huge lead, you lose to another superstar, and then the very next night you're playing Atlanta, and in this time, the TV play-by-play guy, Mike Gorman, is just ripping the team, just destroying the team, saying how selfish Tatum and Brown are. You got Kendrick Perkins saying they're doing the my turn basketball and all this. So, I don't know, how are they going to respond to that? They'll probably bounce back from that one, right? Maybe the worst game, maybe even worse than the New Orleans game. Mm. They just get destroyed by Atlanta. They give up 40 points in the first quarter. Gallinari can't miss. Trae Young's Trae Young, and there's just no effort in there at all. So they've lost three in a row. Do you know that they are – nobody really cares about divisions in basketball. It's all about conference. But they are last in their division. The division that has, like, Toronto and New York, they're last. They're ninth in the conference, which – most years would be a non-playoff team. This year, they're going to bring 10 in and do like a little play-in. So you're going to have to be in the play-in as it stands right now. But imagine that.
By the way, that's a one-and-done play-in, right?
I believe it is one-and-done. Or is it best two out of three?
My understanding is it's a one-and-done play-in. So
MLB
you know, this
style?
Is like,
okay.
You're not even really in the playoffs.
No.
You're not even really in it as it stands right now. You wouldn't be in a traditional sense. You'd be out of it. And even if you didn't think that just because they were in the conference finals a year ago, they were going to be one of the top two teams this year, right? Because Brooklyn got a lot better. Milwaukee, you thought maybe was better because they made some moves. Nobody could have predicted this. They are lifeless. They are such a mess. And I know you guys hit on it a little bit yesterday, but Brad Stevens is getting, I think, a lot of heat right now. Not from Danny, not from Wick, but I think a lot of fans are starting to point towards Brad Stevens, and they're wondering if this guy has the personality for it, and does he get fired up enough, and what do the players think of him? And he did have this to say.
I would say, Gary, what I say to you and everyone else is not what I say in the locker room necessarily. How you say it is certainly very important. I've had my moments. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. You know, Rich.
Yeah, these guys are
Jeff
definitely they're definitely scared of him.
Rich, did you hear what Jeff Goodman said in that interview? What did he say? It was about Brad. I asked him what it was. What was the league perception?
Oh yeah,
of Brad
around
Stevens?
The league, they're like too nice. Yeah.
Too nice. The rest of the league, in addition to the fact that they're predictable on offense, he's too nice.
Yeah,
it's funny because we've contrasted that somewhat with the way Bruce Cassidy has run things from his perspective, and he doesn't rip players, at the post-game podium. he's not going to do that. But he's been honest. He's been forthright. But the key here is, as he has said, I'm not telling you guys anything. I haven't told them in the locker room, in the dressing room already.
Yeah, but I also think what and not to take anything away from Bruce or to give Brad an excuse, but Bruce also had Chara for his first few years, Bergeron, Krejci, Marchand.
Some leadership. Yes.
Yes.
That's
the Celtics
absolutely valid.
They do not have that at all. Nope. And I think that's what we're really learning about Tatum and Brown is, individually, they are light years better than everybody else on the team. But they don't really know how to lead. Nope. Or also the guys don't want to follow them. It just seems they're very selfish. And again, players like that have existed in the league for a really long time. And you talk about, look at this guy who, his career average was 22 points per game and, 7 rebounds and 4 assists and never won a thing. There's a lot of guys like that. And so I don't know if Tatum and Brown are that. It's amazing. I think whatever your criticism of the Celtics is right now, you're probably right. You don't think Danny Ainge built a good enough roster? You're right. You don't think Brad Stevens is breaking through to the guys? You're right. You don't think Tatum and Brown know how to win? You're right. You think Kemba Walker stinks off his injury? You're right. Marcus Smart's hurt? You're right. Like, there's so many things going on with them that it's pretty scary.
With all of those things that have gone wrong, and I agree with everything you just said, it doesn't sound like that's fixable. There are too many things happening here at the same time.
It does. It does seem like it's not one thing, and that's why Jeff Goodman with you guys yesterday I thought was right about, all right, you have a month until the trade deadline, and so you can see what Kemba Walker looks like for another couple of weeks. You'll probably get Marcus Smart back, hopefully, for a handful of games before you have that huge date in the league of the deadline. So see where you're at then, and then try to, figure out what your next move is and if it's solvable for this year.
All I can say, Rich, is if Kyrie and Al Horford end up proving right by bailing off this ship, then that's going to suck.
Yes, it will.
We'll get to Fitzy's Friday Forum take in just a couple of minutes because I have a feeling I got a pretty good idea where this one's headed. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Hey, real quickly, a quick plug to my buddy Greg Hill, Greg Hill Foundation. I am wearing my A.J. Coweta shirt, which the Greg Hill Foundation is selling as a fundraising venture for A.J. and his family. Very nice shirt, by the way, long sleeve T-shirt. You can go to the Greg Hill Foundation website and you can find it. It is a great cause. I heard A.J.'s dad on with Greg this morning, kind of updating on where things stand with him. So I just wanted to give Greg's foundation a plug and specifically go get one of these if you get the opportunity and wear it with pride like all of us are going to be doing. 617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keefe, and Fitzy's in the house with us, but it's time to trend.
More of Dale and Keefe with Fitzy on WEEI.
Some quarterbacks will be hitting the road. Some won't, apparently, in this offseason. Our Friday forum, and we'll get to the calls with you guys in just a few minutes. Rich and I have given you the stories that touched us off a little bit this week. Fitzy, how about you?
Dale, I don't want to sound like a broken record or that maybe you just clipped this from last Friday or the previous Friday and decided to replay it here on the last show of February, but it continues to be a storyline that even Sports Illustrated and the Monday Morning Quarterback said just a couple hours ago is the most compelling and fascinating topic in the NFL right now, which is the Patriots quarterback and or lack of quarterback storyline. It changes every week. There are new names introduced. Now, this week, obviously, the Russell Wilson dynamic was presented. Now, he's gone out and said that he's not demanding a trade, but now he's told us which four teams, or at least he informed his team, which four teams he would consider a trade to, or at least that he would accept a trade to. And Pats fans thought, well, it's not going to cost as much as Watson, so we got to be able to go out and get dangerous. Like, sorry, guys, you don't even have anything resembling the assets to go get Mr. Unlimited.
Well, plus, he has a no-trade clause.
And, like Matthew Stafford, does not want to play here.
Does not want to.
Why would he want a weapons and receiver talent downgrade to go play the rest of his career out?
Why would he pick the Chicago Bears over your team?
Because they have people to throw the ball to.
And that's not, even, well, maybe.
Once you lose Allen Robinson.
He's an unrestricted free agent.
potentially could be Deshaun Watson might want to go to the Bears. People are saying go all in there. But, of course, the Marcus Mariota name continues to get thrown out. Fools like me introduced Gardner Minshew to the equation. Now I got Bleacher Report put out something this morning saying the best choice for the Patriots is a Cam Newton reunion. They are the latest to say that the campaign should get another shot in 2021. Then this week we had Mel Kiper mocking a trade with the Patriots getting Trey Lance at 10 overall, Rich. I don't know how you feel about that. You're in on that one?
I'll take it. Yep, I'd absolutely take it. I think I would. I think any of those top four guys I would be happy with. He's the most kind of dart throw, obviously, out of all of them. Mm-hmm. But I'd take my chances with him over like a Mac Jones or anybody else.
And I
feel
read
like
some social media criticism. Oh, that's too much to give up for him. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
If you think he is your next quarterback. I don't care.
Yeah, no, God, no. If that's who he really thinks, he and McDaniels get together and they look at the draft and they're like, this guy's good and we only have to move up five or six spots to get him. Yes, absolutely.
And he is, when we talk about the many different scenarios or variables that could play out for the Patriots getting a new quarterback for the short or long term, when you say Cam and, it can't be Cam and Stidham. As media and fan and just the entire populace of Patriots Nation would probably be able to get behind or at least stomach Cam Newton coming back and giving it a go if he's mentoring Trey Lance or holding the seat for him while he's still trying to
prove himself.
It's a great
point. It might be the only scenario, in fact, that if Cam Newton signed with the Patriots, the only way there wouldn't be a full revolt, at least by myself, would be if Trey Lance, Justin Fields, I doubt it, but Zach Wilson, like if one of those guys also joined him.
Oh, we've been saying that. I'd be fine with bringing Cam back in that scenario.
In that scenario.
Where he's the placeholder. He's probably going to start the season, especially with Lance. I don't think he's going to be ready to start the season.
He probably wouldn't start week one, especially the way the Patriots are. But I would hope that they would be open to him starting week four, week five, week eight, week 10. I would hope they'd be open to that, but they might not be. And it also might depend on where you're at. And I don't know if the Patriots fans have the stomach for this, but if you have another year of Cam Newton, you're probably going to have another year where you're picking 15th or better, and you'd have another year where you have a good draft pick. So it's lengthening out this rebuild process, but I would feel a whole lot better about it as a fan knowing that a high first-round pick is sitting there as the quarterback. You're developing him. At least he's on the team. He's learning the ropes, and he's ready to go. I mean, the Chiefs sat Patrick Mahomes for a full season. And then the next thing you know, boom, the guy's the greatest thing going. So I would be okay with that.
So as far as the Russell Wilson story is concerned, can I give you a tale of two tweets?
Mm-hmm. Yo, I love tweets.
I love that.
We breathlessly brought the first tweet to you because, you know, it's got Adam Schefter's name attached to it and the blue check mark, and you think, okay, this means something. And Adam Schefter tweeted out, and I'm quoting, Seahawks QB Russell Wilson has not demanded a trade, his agent Mark Rogers told ESPN. Wilson has told the Seahawks he wants to play in Seattle, but if a trade were considered, the only teams he would go to are the Cowboys, Saints, Raiders, and Bears. That's tweet number one. Here's tweet number two from Adam Schefter. Tell me if it sounds different to you. Quote, Russell Wilson has told the Seahawks he wants to play in Seattle, but if a trade were considered, the only teams he would go to are the Cowboys, Saints, Raiders, and Bears, his agent Mark Rogers said to ESPN. Know what's missing? Has not demanded a trade.
Hey, what happened?
Probably has demanded a trade.
Yes, he has.
It doesn't sound like Seattle wants to get rid of him at any point. So the fact that Russell Wilson's even come up with these teams, it's not like they are in a rebuild, right? It's not like in the NBA where sometimes you'll see, I mean, hell, even the Celtics did it. I bet they talked to Pierce and Garnett and they kind of agreed that, you know what? Best for you, best for us, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Seattle's not thinking that. They were just 12-4 and in the playoffs. And he's talking about how he wants to play till he's 45. So they have their quarterback of the present and of the longtime future. And all of a sudden there's a list of teams. Of course he demanded a trade.
Yes.
He wants out. He wants out, and it's going to be now similar to what's going on in Houston. They don't want to trade him, but if these guys pout enough and if they get a huge offer in return – they almost have to. Like, I don't know what it's going to take to convince these guys otherwise to, you know, to turn around. Hey, turn that frown upside down and come back and, you know, give us all your effort. They may not, and then you're just really hurting your franchise.
There's so much fear, though, about the NBA-ification of the league, Dale. There's so many. Like I heard this morning, Ken and the guys
were
talking.
By who? The owners of the NFL teams?
It could be fans. It could be the owners, because you think you're going to be able. Like, it's one thing when Tom Brady is foolishly not renewed or offered a contract after 20 years of the greatest service of all time to a team in the position. But it's another thing for Russell Wilson to be in the middle of his prime and then just decide, like, you know what? I'm done here. Like, what are you doing, Russell? You go to the playoffs every year. Now you need a bigger seat at the table. Now Deshaun Watson, who tweets out every other day that loyalty is a priority to him, even though he just signed a umpteen gazillion dollar deal just 5 months ago and got paid $22 million, $27 million bonus money. I can understand why people might be quaking in their really expensive boots over this.
Let me give credit to Rich Ornberger, former Patriots offensive lineman, who tweeted out about this very topic. And I thought he hit the nail on the head. He wrote, "Dislike what Deshaun Watson is doing? Imagine you graduated law school, top of your class, and you were forced to practice at a firm that bungled resources, surrounded you with poor talent, and the partners overlooked how lucky they were to have your services. After 3 years, they convince you to stay by making you one of the highest paid lawyers in the country, and while not in writing, make promises to build around you. Then the partners start hacking salaries. You'd walk."
I understand what Rich is saying, but there is also the argument that you would have been named the richest quarterback. If you just waited out another year or two, you would have been the richest quarterback somewhere else. Like, you didn't have to sign that huge contract with them.
That's
well,
correct.
But I think in what Rich is also intimating,
it's sports,
and what
dude.
Deshaun is saying
like,
is
like yeah. Also, Rich, it's sports. There are teams that are there are 32 owners. It's kind
but
of
if,
how we're this isn't this isn't
that
lawyer.
Owner,
there aren't a million law firms.
But if that owner lied to the employee, that's where the relationship ends. It's like, wait a minute, you told
me
this and this and this, and now none of that. Why do I want to keep working for you?
Oh, I'm not arguing on Deshaun Watson or even Russell Wilson wanting out. I have no problem with players taking control, but I find it foolish to compare it to a real world thing. These jobs aren't like other jobs. If you want to compare it to the NBA, sure. You get drafted by a team you probably don't want to go to. They pay you millions and millions of dollars, probably part because of that. You don't get to choose where you go, but they pay you a lot better. I don't know what lawyers make. I bet some of them don't make $40 million a year. And so, I don't know. I think it's a kind of a foolish analogy.
Did you see that? They mentioned it on the morning show, the Ryan Russillo tweet where it's like, oh, don't get me wrong, I love my wife, but if I were to move on, here are four women I would consider. Like, you don't get to do that functional relationship.
You want out. You want out.
You absolutely would want out. Dale, could you just, for my benefit and the audience's benefit again, what are those four teams that Russell Wilson said he would be comfortable going to?
I got them, Dale.
A couple of them make sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cowboys?
Well, Cowboys, just because everybody wants to go play for the Cowboys, and they'll pay a whole bunch of money, and they've got this football Taj Mahal and Jerry Jones.
He'd light it up, too. They would chuck it around with him.
Can you imagine with the talent that they have down there, he would throw 50 touchdowns.
They'd have three receivers with 1,000 yards. Yeah.
Right, so then you've got the Saints,
yep,
which again makes sense, although he still hasn't announced it. Drew Brees is retiring. They've got a pretty offensive-minded coach. They've got good weapons around him. You've got climate-controlled play for the most part.
That would be bad news for Brady and the Bucs. Because if
it would be terrible news.
If they go to Winston, who I like, but if they go to him or somebody else, they might be, you know, maybe a playoff team. If they go to Russell Wilson, they're actually a lot better than they were last year.
And, Rich, then give me Deshaun in Carolina, and all of a sudden Brady's like, can you trade me back to the AFC?
Yeah, what are these guys doing here?
About that extension. Bill, how do you feel about me coming back?
Well, similar to that, Fitzy, because I thought the worst case scenario, the worst possible case scenario as a Patriots fan would be if the Jets and Dolphins got Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson. Either
it
one.
Be.
Because Watson, as we know, been connected to both. And when Russell Wilson, we first heard that 10 teams contacted him, you assume those were two of them.
Why
and
wouldn't
so,
you?
So if all of a sudden you go from sitting there in the conference with, you know, Sam Darnold and Tua, you're like, no, it's Deshaun Watson, it's Russell Wilson, Josh Allen.
Yikes.
That's three of the five best quarterbacks in football in the same division. And then who?
Those two teams made sense to me. The next two, not so much. First one is the Raiders. Makes total sense that John Gruden wants him. Total sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is exactly the kind of move John Gruden would want to make. I'm trying to figure out what's in it for Russell Wilson to go there.
I was going to Vegas. Is there a cool factor there or something? Yeah. Are the Raiders still just a cool team? Like, I don't know.
Have you seen that stadium?
By the way, their O-line coach is the same O-line coach who flipped out when they let Russell Wilson throw the ball on the
goal line.
Tom Cable?
Tom Cable's their O-line coach.
Punch you in the face, Tom Cable? Okay. Yeah, yep. Rich, I outlined this scenario yesterday. I have the trade worked out and how it benefits both parties. You do Derek Carr in two firsts to Seattle, and you get back Russell Wilson. Now, Pete Carroll immediately has somebody who's happy to hand the ball off since they want to go more run-oriented, and now they can get back the two first-round picks that they got, or rather that they parted ways with for Jamal Adams. Now they can get some more talent. They get the cap drops. They don't have to worry about losing Tyler Lockett this offseason. So it benefits Seattle, and they've got a very durable quarterback who's pretty smart with the ball, doesn't throw a lot of picks. Seattle doesn't really take a big step back or regress much. And for Russell Wilson, he'll get a greater extension. He works with a quarterback smart guy like John Gruden. Ciara gets to go have her standing show in Las Vegas. She'll have a theater. And it's a big deal for them.
If just Derek Carr was traded, what would Derek Carr go for? Just to try to get his value. What do you think it would be?
Derek Carr is going to go for like a first and a third someplace, I think.
You think so? So basically in that scenario, you're saying Seattle would get three firsts and a third.
Maybe Derek Carr a first and a third. Maybe that's a little too much. Like it's Derek Carr.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is enough. Because I'm just trying to say if Russell Wilson was the quarterback of the Patriots, so if that's your guy and they weren't getting along and they had to trade him, at this point in his career, if you only got two first round picks and a player, I'd want more. And even though I know the player in this scenario is a quarterback, but he's a quarterback who is significantly worse than Wilson, I'd want more. Like your point, if Jamal Adams, as good as he is, but he's a safety, if he's worth two first-round picks, I feel like Wilson's worth more.
Yeah.
Wilson's insane. And I think Wilson's going to be good for another 10 years, too.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
So then the last team, as I said, I understand more from Oakland's perspective than his, but that's fine. The last team that baffles me, and it just totally baffles me, is the Bears.
The Bears! The Bears! Yeah.
So I tried to go back through Russell Wilson's background. He was born in Cincinnati. He grew up in Richmond, Virginia. Now, he did play at the University of Wisconsin.
Right, after NC State.
Right, after NC State.
I don't know.
I can't figure it out.
They are, I know they were 8-8, but they were a playoff team with the combination of Foles and Trubisky. So maybe you're like, it's a good team. If you get a good quarterback there, you could be competitive. I don't know. It is weird because at first I was looking at the list. I'm like, all right, you want to stay in the NFC? He's like, no, but you get the Raiders in there. But nobody in the AFC East. I was surprised. Why no on the Dolphins? Wouldn't you want to?
The Dolphins would make so much sense
for him.
He makes, like, I can't, Russell Wilson doesn't strike me as, like, a jardinier and deep dish pizza guy, like, in that weather. Like, he would
like
want to go to
Ciara
Miami.
Down in Miami with a
oh,
good
are you
team.
Kidding?
And
oh,
I even went so far as to research Ciara to see if she had family ties there. And, no, born in Atlanta, you know.
Weird.
Traveled around a lot, but no, as near as I can tell, no connection to Chicago or Illinois. I couldn't figure out why that one would have been on the list.
It is kind of an odd list.
Why doesn't Jerry Jones just pull the trigger on this now?
Well,
I don't think
Seattle's going to do it yet. I mean, you got to probably blow them away with something right now.
What could they offer? You obviously can't trade Dak Prescott because he's not signed.
Oh, no, you could. You could franchise him and trade him.
But then you're just basically
Now you're making Seattle have to pay him even more than they were paying Wilson, right? Because you're going to have to come up with this
Well, at
deal.
That point, what you do is you allow Seattle to talk to Dak Prescott's group, and you know you can talk contract with him. We're going to franchise him so we can trade him to you, but you know maybe you've already begun the process of a long-term deal contract with him. I mean, I think he'd have to be the centerpiece of the deal if Seattle even considered it.
So Dallas has the number 10 pick in this year's draft. So they have that. What are we looking at here? The Raiders, they're picking 17. Bears at 20.
I don't see those.
Saints at 28. Like, those aren't...
No.
Those aren't great. I mean, Dallas has the best one, but... Yeah, I just think it would have to be three first-round picks. Like, I don't think it's that far off from Watson. Watson would get more just because he's a lot younger, but Wilson's won so much more, and he's great right now, and he's going to be great for a while. I don't know.
Watson is really next level. I mean, we can find you tell me what you want to know and or who you want me to tell you about, and we can find some sort of like contemporary advanced next gen football nerd stat to back it up. But the latest one I heard was graded against like the competition and the talent on his team and what he was able to accomplish statistically, that technically Deshaun Watson's 2020 was the best season a quarterback has had in 15 years in the NFL. Mm.
And they didn't make the playoffs. Statistically, the best year a quarterback's had in 15 years, and they won four games.
Yeah. Bill O'Brien had something to do with that.
Might have. 617-779-7937. We'll get to your calls coming up next. By the way, Adam Ottavino is going to join us today from the Boston Red Sox.
Nice.
One of the offseason moves that Rich Keefe actually endorsed.
Liked it very much.
He liked this one. We're going to give you some of the sound. Chris Sale killed it this morning on the Greg Hill Show, including a not bad Massachusetts accent imitation. Mm. We'll get to that as well. It's Dale and Keefe, and Fitzy's with us here on Sports Radio, WEEI.
Just want to say on the side note, you guys make working from home bearable. I really enjoy listening to you guys all the time.
It's not bearable for me, but I'm glad it's bearable for you.
Back to Dale and Keefe
on EEI.
Deshaun Watson met with new head coach David Culley last week. There was also no resolution. From what I'm told, Watson reiterated his demand to be traded and does not plan on playing for the team in the 2021 season. Meanwhile, the Houston Texans have been adamant they are not trading Deshaun Watson. From many teams who have tried to speak with the Texans, they have gotten a flat no when they have asked about it. The Texans, I'm told, do not view the start of free agency as any sort of deadline for a resolution. They may not view the draft as one either. In other words, expect this to take a while.
Imagine your poor David Culley. You're finally getting an opportunity to be a head coach in the National Football League. Surprised a lot of folks that you got that chance, but you did. Now your very first opportunity to talk to your franchise quarterback, and he basically, I'm paraphrasing, now says, look, it's not you, it's me. I want out of here.
Yeah. He's like, sorry, dude. You stepped into the wrong, you took the wrong job. He's like, I'm already out. There's nobody they could have hired that would have changed Deshaun Watson's mind about this. And, you know, Casario's in a brutal spot, obviously, but I think you have to trade him. I really do. And I think, and I know Rappaport's just telling us what he's heard, but if you don't treat the draft as some sort of deadline, I think that is wildly idiotic.
What a mess. Think about now, all the other teams who are in the market for a quarterback are now going, well, am I in on this? Am I not in on this? Could I talk him into this? So if not, I better go draft a quarterback. I didn't want to draft one, but now what am I going to do?
Or, like, you know, you have a deal lined up with the Jets, or the Jets want Deshaun Watson, but they're not doing it. So then the Jets end up trading the number two pick to somebody else. And what if Houston really likes Zach Wilson? Like, there's a chance Houston could say, listen, we got to move on from Watson, but we can get our next quarterback right now. And not – if you wait till the season starts, or, like, halfway through the season or next season, like, that is so dumb. Watson doesn't seem to be wavering. Like, Russell Wilson is still giving you –
this is a game of chicken, isn't it?
Yep.
With Watson and Casario.
Like, I guess.
Casario said, nope, I won't even leave a voice message. I'm not going to talk to you about because I'm not trading him. And Deshaun Watson says, okay, hold my beer. I'm not showing up.
I'm not playing. I won't show up. I'll show up week 11 or whatever where I have to, so it counts as a season. I'll do that. But that's really nice to introduce, hey, guys, the franchise quarterback's back for five games that he doesn't care about, but it's just, you know, because of the CBA, he has to be here right now. It's a mess. I think you have to get rid of him. Russell Wilson is at least trying to a little bit appear to play nice with the line, like, he'd play in Seattle, but here are the teams that he wants to go to. So he wants out too, but he's giving you the he would play here. Watson's not doing that.
No.
Watson does not want to be here, and so you're not even doing your job if you're just hanging up on people. What if a team did call you and said six first-round picks? You're not even there to answer the call?
No, like, you got to run it by Jack Easterby, Rich. You're going to have to run it. Casario's got to run it up, fly it up the Easterby flagpole. So there's a whole convoluted network of nonsense going on down there in Houston. It makes zero sense to me why you would wait, because I was saying yesterday with Dale and Andy, Rich, that these teams now may have to try, if they think they have a shot at him, it's like in the NBA where it's like, okay, well, we're going to tank this year, and then next year we're going to sell off all these contracts so that we have all this money available so we can make a run at LeBron, like the Knicks tried to do, or like make a run at LeBron, or try to get Carmelo or whatever. Mm. So there's teams like Carolina, who made a super aggressive, if not the best offer for Matt Stafford, and were rebuked for that offer from the Rams, who want a quarterback. David Tepper, the owner, wants to be characteristically aggressive. Matt Rhule is dying for a franchise quarterback down there. They think they got something going on already. They'll offer the moon for Deshaun Watson. But if they don't get him by April 28th or whatever day is the first round of the draft, they're going to move on, and they're going to likely going to leave. And you can get Justin Fields, Trey Lance, or Zach Wilson. What the hell are you doing waiting to deal him?
Yeah, you could start the full-on rebuild for right now, right? And ideally, hey, you as a franchise drafted Deshaun Watson. You hit on that. He should be a franchise quarterback for a long time, but he's not. He doesn't want to be. Mm-hmm. He's out. The damage is done on that. So in order to not have five lost seasons in a row, you need to rip that Band-Aid off and trade him for a haul. And at the very least, you don't have to trade him on February 26th, but take the calls, write down all these different offers, and then find out who you're serious about dealing with, and then pit those teams against each other. But hey, Miami, you know, New York's offering four first-rounders, so if you guys want to kick in a fourth and throw in another player, like, they should get – I'm telling you, reset the haul that it would be. The Herschel Walker deal would be the Deshaun Watson deal. And they should be working on it right now, not taking calls and letting it go to voicemail.
There is no way Nick Caserio had any idea how bad it was. There is no way. He would not have taken this job.
No, because he was part of the tipping point, too. So it wasn't this bad until he got hired, and because they told Deshaun that he would have some say in that, and he never even talked to Nick. So Nick shows up. He's like, hey, like, can't wait to meet you. Hey, where is he? Where's the quarterback? Oh, he doesn't want to play? He doesn't want to talk? And then they had the list of coaching candidates that they wanted to talk to, and Bieniemy wasn't even on it. And then later on, they're like, "Oh no, we'll talk to Bieniemy." And Watson's like, "All right, I'm done here. I'll see you guys later."
Garbage.
And now they're left. You know, Cully and Caserio have to do these press conferences where they're like, "Yeah, Deshaun's a part of the team, and it's why I'm here," and blah 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 blah. And you're like, "Oh, you guys are just you're looking worse and worse," and it's all because of McNair and Easterby. It's all a McNair problem. But you know he's going to be there. He's going to be the last man standing with when you own the team. But, yeah, it just seems like it's really gone from, I mean, it's worse than bad, but it's a horrible situation now because.
And it's going to screw up the entire league.
Yeah, this the whole draft, the whole league, all of it.
This one thing. I'm not. Now, Kansas City doesn't give a damn. They're fine. Tampa doesn't give a damn. But there's half the teams in the league, maybe more, would take Deshaun Watson as their quarterback. And would make a significant trade to get him. And that whole group of teams are now sitting there going, I don't know what to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's holding everyone hostage, basically, Dale. That's what you're saying. And the funny thing is, or rather, he's not. The Texans could be. And they're staring at the gift of a rebuild, a free rebuild, and also not owing someone $35 million a year, staring them in the face for somebody who does not want to play with them. I don't care what the optics are. Optics be damned. Be bold. Fortune favors the bold. Make the move. Restart the franchise. Let him get out of there and carry on with his life. This is just, God, this is going to get so annoying so fast. And I'll tell you what, as we spent so much time this week on the station, like, oh, the Patriots are not going to be an attractive destination for free agents. You know what else is not going to be? Houston.
Right. No, it's for sure not going to be. Well, it's funny, too, because anytime a player really, really wants out, there's only a few times where you can really convince them, and it has to be really surface level on the court, on the field stuff, right? Because I'm sure Paul Pierce, like there were some rumors that in like 06, 07, he would have been happy to go. He would have been happy to leave. But guess what? Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen show up, and now you're thrilled to stay. And like even Kobe Bryant, like that was a story that was out there for a while. After those years post Shaq, Kobe might have left. He might have left L.A., but I think it was Pau Gasol and somebody else, they got him, and you're like, all right, I'll win here. The Watson and Wilson ones don't appear to be like that. It isn't, hey, get them a really good left tackle and a tight end, and they're going to stay. Like, that's got nothing to do with Watson. Like, I don't know how you convince him to stay. And so now you're just going to – you're going to kind of hurt your team's chances of a rebuild by holding on to him so long. You have a golden opportunity, April 29th. It's the first night of the draft to sort of turn things around. Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, we're not going to do it because he's going to play. Yeah, he's going to reluctantly play for you? Like, I don't think so.
Let's get to the calls with you guys. Ken's down on the Cape. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. Always listened for a long time. Never been motivated to call in, but I almost ran my truck off the road down here this morning. You know, you guys are supposed to eat breakfast, not smoke it. Bring back Cam Newton? Come on. The guy is done. You've whipped us into the ground. He would take up such a valuable roster spot. You guys are out of your minds.
Okay, well, listen, the only caveat was I would accept a Cam Newton re-sign if they drafted Trey Lance or Justin Fields, a guy who is going to be your future quarterback, but he might not be your week one quarterback. That'd be, because in that scenario, you would need a veteran anyway. So either swap out Cam Newton for Alex Smith or Tyrod Taylor or whatever. What's the difference? And they like Cam Newton. So that's the only reason why I'm okay with that.
Cam Newton would take up a spot. And then what
for
happens?
Who?
He's your backup all of a sudden?
Yeah,
you take up a spot.
Yes, that's what it'll be.
Brian Hoyer had a spot for many years.
As a coach.
Bring him in
as a coach if you want a mentor, but not a roster spot.
All right, so you want to make sure Brian Hoyer has that roster spot?
Because what's he going to be, a backup if something happens?
Yes.
You guys are out of your minds. He's done. We all know
he's that great either, but this is sort of...
No one here is advocating for him to, like, I can't wait for Cam Newton season again. There may be a wait-and-see approach, and we may have to deal with it because there aren't many other savory options, my friend.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number.
Smoking your breakfast.
Well, I mean, you had
donuts. We drink our breakfast around
here. Come on.
You had tasty donuts.
Well.
I see your backdrop there. You had tasty donuts for your breakfast.
Dale, did I have some donuts this morning. Ooh, man, nothing I love more than a non-chain donut to start the day at 6:05. Ooh.
There you go.
Well, Keith and I did smoke our breakfast, but that's another tale for another day. Chris Sale joined the Greg Hill Show this morning. We got to play some of the highlights. We'll get back to the calls with you in a couple of minutes as well. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio, WEEI.